and Hopi, fighting crime with Penitentiary, and living around the wild with Haliba. We hope that with this exhibition, you too are able to enter the world of Love and Rockets, take a journey into Barrio Huerta and Palomar, and immerse yourself in all the stories. The blood, sweat, and tears, the sex, love, and rockets. Before I bring Jaime up to speak, I would like to give a brief introduction into the world of Love and Rockets and the world of Los Bros Hernandez. Jaime Hernandez, along with his brothers, Gilbert and Mario, grew up surrounded by comics and were drawing from a very early age. Born and raised in Oxnard, California, Los Bros were inspired by the Latino community in which they lived, as well as the hardcore and punk music scene of Southern California. Their stories combine elements of science fiction with reality, rendering complex characters and illustrating issues of race, class, gender, and sexuality. In 1981, they self-published their first issue of Love and Rockets, which was later picked up by Fanagraphics and ran from 1982 to 1996. 50 issues later, and with other projects in the works, Los Bros Hernandez revived the series in 2001 due to popular demand. Love and Rockets has been translated into 6 languages, has a loyal fan base worldwide, and continues to grow in popularity while maintaining the fresh, hard-hitting, and brilliantly narrated and illustrated stories from which the comics first began. In addition to Love and Rockets, Gilbert and Jaime have illustrated a large body of work and continue with their own individual projects. In 2005, Gilbert released The Naked Cosmos, a TV show from another planet, maybe even another universe. In 2006, Jaime's work was serialized in the New York Times Magazine, and he has illustrated album covers for various bands, including Michelle Schacht, Indigo Girls, and more recently, Los Lobos. Now, please join me in welcoming the creative genius behind Love and Rockets, and an all-around cool guy, Jaime Hernandez.
I don't usually know how to start these things, so I'll start from the very beginning. I was born in Oxnard, California in 1959. Oxnard was this kind of small town, kind of north of LA. That was kind of weird because we had agriculture and we had the beach, you know, and mountains on this side. And so we had this strange mixture of, you know, Mexicans and aged movie stars who had beach homes, stuff like that. grew up, you know, my mom and dad came to Oxnard for the work because of the fields and the packing houses and stuff like that. We used to be the lima bean capital of the world. And now it's boasted for its strawberry. They boast for the strawberries. Grew up in a house that I thought we were pretty normal kids. And I grew up in a house full of comic books. And I thought that was normal till I started going to school. You know, I didn't know that only geeks read comic books. But our mom was a comic fan when we were, when she was a kid, and she and her mom always threw them away, so she had to hide them. And she always vowed that she would never throw away our comics. So she kind of encouraged it in the house, so comics was a regular thing, you know. In the summertime, she'd bring out the bags of RG comics, and, you know, we'd all go through them like it was a treat, you know, Christmas again, you know. And just read comics, and one day my older brothers, Mario and Gilbert, they decided, well, let's draw our own comics, you know, we're little kids. And whatever they did, the rest of us did, the smaller kids. You know, there was 5 boys and a girl, so, you know, if the oldest one did it, so did the next one, then the next one, and the next one. And I don't remember this because I was really small, but Gilbert says after he he and Mario drew their first little comic. Mario did a Superman comic, and Gilbert did a comic called Spaceman. And they said that they quit. They lost interest after that, and they said, I start drawing. Kept drawing them for myself. And they were like, wow, what's he doing? You know, we should keep doing this. But anyway, I don't remember that. But so we drew comics, and comics were a cool thing. And you know, and next to that was music, because I was 4 years old when the Beatles came to America. So it was like pop music and comics, you know, and monster movies and everything like that. And but we kept drawing comics no matter what we did. You know, and we created our own characters after a while. You know, I remember at first I would draw Batman comics, and I must have drawn Batman's origin story like 5 times over, you know. And but then we started doing our own characters, and Gilbert was really into it. Really, I mean, he would create whole complete series of characters of different genres, and then he'd get into a different genre. And he would just create all this stuff, and it was harder for me. So my comics always started off like real, like, you know, look, bandits, and then they would chase the crooks, and then the last panels would just be pow, bam, and then it'd say take them away, and then be the end. I didn't know how to write stories or anything like that. And anyway, we just kept at it, and. We always drew, and everyone in the house drew, all the siblings drew, but for some reason Gilbert and I were the only ones who kept at it. And we just, and some of our comics, you know, our series got pretty in-depth, like we really got into them and stuff like that. And then as when we became teenagers, we thought, the real comic guys, the professionals, they don't draw in ballpoint pen, you know. so we go, well, what do they use? They use ink in bottles and pens, you know, to ink and stuff like that. So we're like, wow, we should try that. But I was scared, you know. I'd like, you know, blot it and stuff like that, but I just kept doing it just for fun, and then the older we started getting, we started, you know, I was going to graduate high school, and I didn't want to get a real job, and so we started submitting like drawings, you know, superhero drawings or science fiction aliens to like fanzines, you know. In those days, fanzines were run by, you know, fanboys who were into science fiction or dragons or something like that, and send these drawings, but I really wanted to do my characters, you know. I was done doing superhero stuff, so I was leaning more toward you know, science fiction or something like that. And I have these characters. I created in high school. I created this character Maggie, who was just this female character that I wanted to do stories about, of just anything, like, you know, send her to the Stone Age and fight dinosaurs, or send her into outer space, you know, just anything like that. Then as I started getting older, she started to evolve, like. Then I made her a space mechanic, and I wanted to do these stories called Adventures of Race and Chase, and that was her name, last name at first. She was a white girl, and then one day we just like slapped ourselves and go, what? You know, why are we doing white characters? You know, we don't know anything about them. and we just started going like, God, how come we don't do stories about our own culture, you know, stuff like that, but just for the fun of it. And And I think it was my younger brother. He had this comic book where he had these cast of kid characters, and he did one issue where he turned them into homeboys, you know, and gangbangers and stuff like that. And he just threw all this talk and everything in there, and we just thought, hey, that's cool. I want to create characters like that, you know. But we still wanted to do these comics, but we didn't know where to do them. You know, we were like, but who would publish something like this? You know, I guess we're just gonna have to keep sending, you know, drawings of aliens to fanzines or something, because I'm not gonna move to New York and draw Spider-Man. I didn't want to do that, you know. But partly because I didn't know how to draw this Manhattan skyline, you know. But I thought that was the only place to go if you wanted to do comics. And then Gilbert and I and my younger brother, we got into punk, and around like late 70s, like more 78, and we discovered punk, and a friend of Gilbert's invited him to LA to go see some bands, and then Gilbert came back and goes, guys, we gotta do this, you know, we gotta, it's cool, you just go to the clubs, and it's not like a stadium, you know, the band is in the audience, and then when they play, they just climb up on stage and start playing, and we go, wow, that's cool, you know, stuff like that, and because, you know, we grew up on stadium rock, you know, and so we got into the whole punk thing, but we're like drawing on the side, but we're mostly into hanging out with friends, going to shows, and starting bands and stuff like that. So when I would do my drawings, Maggie started cutting her hair, you know, she would wear little buttons, punk buttons and stuff like that, but she was still a rocket mechanic. And I was still drawing that on the side going like, God, that'd be cool if I could do a comic like this, but where, you know? And then one day your brother Mario came over and said, hey, I met some woman who works at a college who can get us some cheap printing. Do you guys want to make a comic? And we're like, okay, cool. And they go, okay, Jaime, we need 12 pages or whatever. And Gilbert, you do whatever pages. And I went, okay. And I go, what do I got? Okay, well, I got these Maggie stories where she's the mechanic and her friends. I got these friends, I got Penny Century and I got Hopi and stuff. Like, I guess I'll do stories about them. And so we put the comic together, and then it turned out that we could only get the free negatives, and we had to find the printing ourselves. So we borrowed money from our younger brother, and we took it to get printed. And I remember the first person we took it to said, looked at it and said, we don't print pornography. But you know, that just made us more determined. And so we finally got a printer, and then we got all the pages back, and we kind of stapled an issue together for ourselves, and we planted it up on the couch and just stared at it and go, cool, our own comic. And we go, now what? You know, we're like, well, why don't we take it to those conventions? You know, they had local conventions in LA. And so we drove over there with stacks of the comic, and we were like, carried them in with us and like went to anybody at a table, you know, and just went like, you know, here, what do you think of this? Some people would look at it and go, that looks like a swipe, you know, oh, you copied that or something like that. And then they were like, you need color covers, you know, or it won't sell. People don't buy black and white stuff. And we were like, oh man, we can't afford color or anything like that. And so we just kind of went home and said, well, let's try to sell it, you know. We don't know what to do. There was no black and white market at the time. And I think the only comics were ElfQuest and Cerebus. And this was only black and white comics out. And And so we just took it home, and Gilbert got this idea to send a copy to the Comics Journal, which was a magazine of comic criticism, and they were kind of known for being mean guys. And us coming from punk background, we were like, hey, that's cool. Let's send them a copy, and even if they hate it, maybe they'll review it, and we'll get free advertising. Gilbert sent it to them, and then it was maybe a month later, or maybe some weeks later, we just forgot about it, and we got a letter from Gary Groth, the publisher, who said, hey, we love this. We're thinking of publishing our own comics. Can we publish this? And we went, for 2 seconds, like, well, we go, okay. they were just starting out, too. They had a few things printed at the time, but ours was going to be their first regular series. And we were just happy that we were going to be in print. We had no idea of where it would go, if it would sell or what. And then the first issue came out. We went to the San Diego Comic Convention in 82, and the first issue premiered there, and we're like making our way through the convention, looking for it on tables and stuff like that. And we saw the first one we saw, some guy had it, and he had a sign that said half off. And so so we were like, oh, that's great, and then we looked inside, like, oh, look, here's the comic, with a color cover and everything. And we looked in, and one of the pages was printed backwards. And so, anyway, after that, they expected a second issue, and we go, oh, yeah, okay, well, let's do a second issue. And I think it took me like 10 months to do the next issue or something like that, because we just had no concept of deadline or, got to put this out to sell, stuff like that. And then after a while, it just kind of took off. And at first, it was word of mouth, and professionals supported it at first. And then after a while, it just kind of took off, and Gilbert and I were really excited. And Mario just got kind of left behind because he wasn't, he had stopped doing comics for a long time to get married and start his own family. And Gilbert and I were just bumming around, so we just spent all the time drawing comics. And then it took off, and it's been the same way ever since. I think I needed more time, right? as soon as we were getting a response that the people liked what we did, like they liked Maggie and Hopi, that was the first thing they liked. It was, we really like your two characters, Maggie and Hopi. I go, cool, because that's all I want to draw, they like the ethnicity of it and all that stuff. So Gilbert and I just had this duty of telling our story, and so all the rocket ships and robots in it started to drop off because we started wanting to tell more serious personal stories, and we knew that if I wanted to have someone in danger from being shot or something, then it would look silly if there was a dinosaur in the background. So it was kind of like the more people told us what to do or what not to do, we would just got more excited. We were just like cool, because this is what we want to do. And even people who were saying well, I liked it better when you did that. And we were like, we don't care. it was just really exciting to have people support all this world of ours, And the more we got into it, the more it just dived into our upbringing and, stories lot of stories that our aunts and grandmother told us, you know. And it was kind of easy to do because there was not really anything like that in comics at the time. It wasn't until we started get going that we found a lot of other cartoonists with personal vision started going, hey, cool, you know, we're gonna do this too. We can do what we want now and tell our side, you know. So then all of a sudden this black and white market was created, which started out as an economical thing, you know, because we couldn't afford color. But then it became this art form, you know. It's just been the same since. I every time I start an issue, I'm just really excited, you know, to do my comics and tell my story. And let's see what else.
If you want to send us a Q&A, just send it off.
Yes. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Have you self-taught, or did you take any drawing classes, or are you just?
Yeah, I'm mostly self-taught. I've taken like life drawing classes. I had this one life drawing class in junior college that where I had this old crusty teacher that really helped me a lot. He was a really good teacher. They had this art department of these old guys who were all classically trained, you know, and they were all just really cool teachers, old style, you know, and they helped me a lot, definitely.
Why do you think you were so interested in drawing female characters like you were doing here?
Okay, there's been many theories on that, because usually I just say, I don't know, I just draw, you know, but it all started when I was getting older, and then Gilbert told me, you gotta start drawing girls again, you know, we gotta start drawing girls, they're cool, they're strong, you know, and of course, I was drawing them out of, because I was an excited young man, you know, you know, but I started to learn that if I wanted to put them in a comic, that I knew I had to be, there was a certain responsibility for everything I put in my comics, you know, so well, if I'm going to put women in my comics, they can't just be curves on the page, you know. I gotta be responsible and make them human, you know. I don't know where that came from, but I just felt that it wasn't legitimate unless there was a certain responsibility to it, you know. And that's when I started making them characters and really caring about how they felt and stuff like that. And I remember I was still doing superhero comics for myself, making up my own gang of superheroes. And I had this one woman superhero that after a while I only wanted to do stories about her, you know, and I didn't want to do the rest of the guys. And that's kind of how that started, you know. And then I remember early in Love and Rockets, people would point out, they'd say, you know, your women characters are so strong and your men are pretty weak. And I'd say, no, my men aren't weak. You just don't want women in charge. You know, you take the women out and see how the men are by themselves, and you'll find they're just like any character. It's just the way people see it. It's like when I started making Maggie put on weight, you know, that's probably the most hate mail I've ever got, you know. You know, they were like, you know, so how long is Maggie gonna be fat? And I was like, how long? You know? You know, she put on weight. Well, I'm sorry, man. It's for the duration. and I started to realize how some of my fans were thinking the old way. You know, they were thinking like, you know, oh yeah, yeah, you put this interesting thing where you made her lose weight. Now let's get back to business. You know, I was like, well, the more you tell me not to, I'm gonna, you know, keep doing it.
Have you talked much to Gilbert? Because you guys women look so different. Have you talked much to him about how he draws, say, Lulu and J-Lo versus how you draw Opie and Maggie?
No, you know, with me and Gilbert, since, you know, we're brothers and we've been close for, you know, since we were little, it's kind of like we don't talk about that stuff, but we feel it, you know? It's kind of like when I'm having trouble with a story or something, and I'm like, I call him up and I go, oh, I'm just like, this story's terrible, and I got trapped in this thing, this again, and I'm doing this and that and that, and he doesn't have to say a thing, but by the time we're done with our conversation, I'm like, I got it. You know, it's kind of that sibling thing, you know? So it's almost like we don't exactly talk about it, but we talk about it without talking about it, you know?
The generation of comic book people who came after you, who grew up on Love and Rockets and other comics, you know, which your world was open and wasn't just superheroes. Are there any things, say, from that time or the last few years you see that you think are pretty exciting or you would recommend?
Of comics?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't really follow that much, that closely as I used to, you know. I know a lot more people draw better than they used to. there's always great comics coming out. You know, I don't follow that many, but there's plenty of talented people out there. There's a couple in this room that I like. There's this comic called Raisin Pie that I really recommend by Ariel Bardot and Rick Ultega. Oh, there they are! the thing I think is really cool is that there's so many comics out there now of people doing it their way. And you know, in 1982, there was none. You know, or very few, and it's just really cool. But you kind of get lost. You know, after a while, I just care about drawing my own comics, and then all just tons of comics coming out while I'm not looking. You know, so I can't keep track. You know, so there you go. Yeah.
Why did you stop drawing for 5 years?
Oh, you mean between Love and Rockets and Love and Rockets?
Yeah.
No, it never stopped. And there's a funny story about that. When we finished Love and Rockets, Gilbert did a comic called New Love, and I did Wool Nelly. And then I did Penny Century, which ran 7 issues, and Gilbert did several other projects, but we never stopped. But we found out that a lot of people thought we quit, and they were looking for the name Love and Rockets, but it wasn't there. So I heard from many retailers at comic stores saying that people would come and say, "Do you have Love and Rockets?" And they would say, "Oh, they don't do that anymore. But here's the new Penny Century, or here's something like that." And then they would say, "Where's Love and Rockets?" And we said, and we go, "Oh, it's the name." And so Gilbert and I talked about it and go, "Well, let's just start it up again." That's why we came back. You know, we just, like, you know, well, we're doing the same material anyway, so we're not selling out, you know. But, it's the name. The name is, we're nowhere without the name. Yeah. And recently I was just coming to a point where I'm wrapping up some stories and trying to think of going in a different direction. And then I noticed that Love and Rockets started to become Gilbert and my second project, when it used to be our main thing, and we were doing stuff on the side, doing extra stuff on the side, and that stuff started to take over. Like Gilbert's been doing some graphic novels on the side and stuff like that. And then so I called up Gary Groth, our publisher, and I said, so I need your opinion. What do you think? Do you think Love and Rockets is done? I mean, should we concentrate on doing this in other forms, or, maybe single graphic novels or something like that? And he said, no, we need the name out there. And I said, so you think this is still worth doing as this little pamphlet, outdated kind of way of doing the comic, because the pamphlet form is just going out, of fashion. And he said, no, I think you guys should still do it, because you guys are one of the few left that still do it this way. And that was enough, good enough for me. And I said, okay, cool. So yeah, 11, we never went away. We just...
Yes?
I have a question about the New York Times that you did. Was the creative process for that very different than for the regular run of Love and Rockets? Is the difference is conceptualized, a story that comes out weekly?
Yeah, it was, the New York Times thing I did was very different. It was, I had to think of millions of readers instead of thousands of readers. I had to, think of one page a week, putting in that format, and then a story that was just going to end in 20 weeks, or 16 or whatever. So I had to think about that, and I tried to think of, who could I put in there? What could this story be about that just makes it a little different? And I was trying really hard not to think of Joe Everybody, who never even heard of comics, who was going to see it, who reads the New York Times. And I agonized over it, and it just reminded me of being a kid, of being young, when I used to do artwork for other people, in someone's small newspaper or something like that, and I just agonized because I didn't know what the public wanted, or what how they saw things. And so I just said, wait a minute, okay, New York Times called me because they want me, so I thought, okay, I'll just give them me, but I still couldn't get a million readers out of my head. And I went from different characters to use, well, I'll use this character. This character doesn't need explanation. And then I went, oh, that doesn't work. And I go, okay, then I need a character who doesn't cuss that much, because I can't have any foul language in it. So I was thinking, and then finally I just go, I'll just do Maggie. It worked fine. It worked fine. I learned a lot from it. There's stuff I would change now. In the long run, I thought it was okay. But it was a little hard because they're very big on words. There. So the editors were real big on taking my words apart and changing the way Maggie talks. Which at first I was like, how dare you? I think it worked out okay. I mean, it was a learning experience, that's for sure.
If I recall a recent news item correctly, Fantagraphics is redesigning the trade paperback Love and Rockets to look more like manga, at least on the cover level. Mm-hmm. What's your feelings about that?
Money. Oh, it's fine. It's, yeah. I'm not, I wouldn't know how.
You're down with the design. I mean, you.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't know how to sell it anyway. So I trust. I got to put my trust in somebody.
There's not going to be any kind of cognitive dissonance there when they get the manga cover and open it up and it's Love and Rockets inside.
Well, that's their problem. As a matter of fact, we're thinking of going after issue 20 of the current Love and Rockets, we're thinking of going a short, smaller size.
Uh-huh.
Just because it's the market, can't fight the market, you know, it's just changing, and sizes of comics are changing, the thickness of comics are changing, you know. So, you know, as long as I'm able to do the work I want to do inside, you know, I don't care, really, as long as if it helps.
You're going to have to construct the stories back to front.
Yes.
Recently, comics have had been the inspiration of a lot of movies. Have they ever talked about doing anything with Love and Rockets?
Oh, yeah. We've been doing power lunches for 20 years. And for the most part, that's all we've been doing.
You know,
we went different routes. You know, we talked to big name people, and it didn't go anywhere. We talked to small people, it didn't go anywhere. We tried to stab at writing it ourselves and listening to other people, and it didn't go anywhere. You know, and so right now, I'm talking to some reputable people, but it's who's to say if it's going to happen, you know. But I'm 47 years old and I can't afford to say no all the time. So. Yes, young man.
Tell me some of the bands that you were interested in when you guys were into the punk scene.
In the punk scene?
Yeah, a couple names.
When we first started going, the hot bands in LA, X, Black Flag were young. The Go-Go's were a punk band. The Weirdos, Fear, Plugs. See, the cool thing about LA, as opposed to like New York and England, where it was that New York and England had big companies after them. You know, the Ramones had a major label album in 1976, you know. Sex Pistols were signed, less than a year they were around or whatever, you know. And L.A., no one wanted to punk in L.A., so it was a do-it-yourself thing. It had to be built from the ground up. Bands like The Knack and Motels were being signed, but I never even heard of them. That was what was fun about LA, was it was just untouched. It was untouched for a long time before the majors started going after them. So it was kind of cool, and you know, like your own raw, real, however they say that, you know. And yeah, that was it. Okay. It was a lot of fun in those days.
And I see you guys, like the Ramones are known as the Johnny Appleseeds of rock. Everybody hears and wants to start their own band after hearing Ramones. There's a lot of comic artists. You guys, you and Bill, have that same kind of reputation.
Huh?
You know, everybody wants to be Love and Rockets. Everybody references it as an early inspiration. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that's cool. but you know, at the same time, there was Raw and Weirdo were out, and a lot of people were already there, but I don't know, I think our coming from the bottom up kind of inspired people that it was cool, you know, that like, hey, we can do this, you know.
I think there's time for one more question, so gentlemen.
Could you tell us a little bit about your experiences with the changing face and reality of the punk scene in Southern California and California as a whole, particularly with like punk violence, and how that affected your comics and just your life in general?
When punk was the funnest thing in the world. Then the Orange County guys came and started the slam dancing, and then it became a real, you know, became, it was fun violence at first, and then it became real violence, and then I started to go less and less, and I was being threatened, you know, and by that time though, you know, my little town of Oxnard started its scene. You know, we had our own scene, so I didn't go to LA as much. And by that time, you know, it became, these sections were being turned into gang. It was becoming gang mentality and stuff like that, and real serious. So I preferred to stay home, you know. but at the same time, I wasn't gonna let them take away my fun. That was some of the funnest times I had in my life, you know. Inspiring, you know.
And how do you feel like that affected the progression of the Maggie and Sophie story?
It was just the gave me the cockiness of, like, I knew I had something here. No one was going to tell me I couldn't, you know. So, you know, it's, you know, and I put putting that into the characters, you know, you know, as I got older and started to lean certain ways, so did they, you know. And I had to think, every life change I made, I had to think about, you know, those characters and think, like, what would they be into now? Maybe they don't want to do that anymore. Maybe they want to raise families, or maybe they don't want to raise families, but the peer pressure's there, you know, stuff like that. And that's kind of how I do Maggie. The older she gets, I kind of see where I am in my life, and then I kind of see, like, okay, if I knew Maggie and she went through that, all that stuff, what would where would she be now? You know, what kind of decisions would she make? And if she doesn't make that decision, you know, how can I work that into a story? Stuff like that, you know. And that, and some characters, like Hopi, people I've known like her didn't last too long in my life, and I always wondered, like, how does a person like that survive, or what do they do, you know? And so she was a little trickier to deal with, and while I kept her around, a lot of characters like her, I had to drop out of the scene, and I treated it like people that I wouldn't see in 10 years, and then I'd see them 10 years later, and then I'd find out what their life was like, you know, like, wow, you did that, and then, you know, all this time, you had a whole life, you know, going on, you know, and that's kind of how I treat the characters, like people that come in and out of my life, you know, stuff like that. So Hopi was a tricky one, because I couldn't imagine what she'd do after being Hopi, you know, now it's easier, but at the time, I was like,
okay, so if we could thank Kame for coming out. And just a reminder that now it's food and party time, the JMBC on benefit between Power and Williams. And if you can save your shoulder rubbing and talking with Jaime for over there, that would be fabulous. Thanks a lot.